Blog Talk Radio.
Protest.
Time is now 6:03 p.m. on the East Coast, 3:03 p.m. on the West Coast. Today is January the 20th, 2024, and you're tuned in to the TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. Happy Saturday, everyone. How are you doing today? And I got to tell you, if you're not a football fan, today should be the day, because right now there's one of the greatest games going on right now between the Houston Texans and the Baltimore Ravens. Halftime, tied 10-10. I'm a huge football fan, so I'm really enjoying this, okay? Janet should be joining us momentarily, and we have a few topics, some things that we're going to talk about today. Of course, we're going to do a little bit of politics, seeing that one of the Red Ones' trials have come to to their closing arguments the other day, so should be pretty interesting to see what the outcome is going to be on this one. And we got, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I don't know, I've lost track. More trials to go. More of the Donald Trump saga to continue. So that's what we're going to be looking at, or we're going to be discussing today in the show. All right, so waiting for Janet to chime in, because she sent me some of the information. Let me go over here. Oh, also, we're going to talk about, you know, something that we deal with every day, every single day we deal with. I know you're probably going to think, okay, Michael, come on now, spit it out. What is it? It may sound crazy, but barcoding is something that we deal with every day. Everything we purchase pretty much has a barcode, which is normally known as a UTC. And it's amazing of the millions and millions of barcodes that are out there. And we just take for granted. And everyone was curious, how did it come about? When did it start? You know, and how much it makes it easier for us to, for companies for their inventory, you know, to also to identify certain products. So we're going to get into the history of the barcode. Yay! Okay. So let me see here. Let me do something on the board here. Okay, here we go. All right. Also, I had to open up the chat room, by the way. Also, let me see what else we're going to look at. I'm getting some of this information in real time, so bear with me. Also, we're going to look at, oh, there's some other stories. There was a woman who was charged in the death of a Six Flags employee. She was ejected from a van. Now, that's going to be interesting. She was ejected from the van. Okay, so we'll have to read into that. And also, back to Donald Trump. Donald Trump's marriage to Melania is allegedly only business and not pleasure. What I would think there was pleasure in the beginning, maybe. I don't know. We'll get into that. Business, not. Okay. Okay. And Melania Trump delivers eulogy for mother at a Palm Beach funeral. And I heard something about that, that where he was, I think Donald Trump was supposed to be in court that day, and the Jets denied him not to, we'll read that story too. Let's see, what else? And that's pretty much what we're going to, you know, discuss. Okay, so bear with me for a moment, and what I'm going to do is give us a couple of tunes here. Until, type this in real quick. Okay, until we get Jen on the line, because she's going to give us some more information on this stuff, okay? Let me see, there's something in here. Nope, that's about it. All right, so let's take a quick music break, and we'll be back. And I think I want to play, let's see. Okay, okay, Jen, I popped up. All right. I'll throw in a music break in a moment. But let me go ahead and open up the mic and say hello to the one, the only, Jen Pollock Hawkins Davis.
And good evening, good evening.
Now, hey, how you doing today?
I'm good. I'm sorry for the delay. I was sending over some at last minute things, so check your text.
Yeah, I know. I let everybody know. I definitely put the information out there. Ran across some of the topics and some of the stories here. I didn't know it was with the Trumps that it was business, not pleasure. But I was thinking it was pleasure at you know, the start. You know, then,
well,
it became,
yeah,
business.
Mm-hmm. They're trying, you know, to say it was business and not pleasure.
Now, who was there, I wonder? Well, but for first and foremost, I want to share this part of it. Is that where, for you football fans, already said, great game on. Well, we want to stay here and still listen to the show, but great game on right now. The Ravens and the Texans. Tied.
Don't chase them away. They might tune into the game.
No, I'm not chasing them away. No. Well, you know, there's a lot of folks who can watch a game with the volume down, okay? So, you know, you don't have to really hear everything. But it's a great game. It's a great game. I have the volume down, but I'm still looking at it. But it's a great game. And I'm going for the Texans. I'm just going to put that out there. Since my team, the Raiders, couldn't get
– Raiders?
I just said the Texans, Houston Texans, and the Baltimore Ravens are playing.
Oh.
That's who's playing there. Yeah, great game. All right, so with that being said, let's get into some of these stories here. And first one, well, I want to get into the Six Flags one first, and then we'll go into the Trumps, because there's different things about it. Because this one here, I, you know, just vaguely heard about it. I wasn't too sure, but I'm trying to understand that And see, this woman is charging the Six Flags over Georgia employee's death. Just a little bit of the story. The woman faces felony involuntary manslaughter and 6 counts of reckless conduct charges, according to the warrant filed in the Cobb County Magistrate Court. And yes, people, Six Flags is in Cobb County. It's not in Atlanta. Okay? It is. I had an argument with my former brother-in-law. He kept saying, Mike, no, Six Flags is in Fulton County, man. That's Atlanta, man. I'm like, no, it's not, man. That's Cobb County, okay? You know,
yes,
you got the Chattahoochee River, which separates the two. That is Cobb County, so Cobb County gets all the money and the revenue for that theme park. But no, so when you think about it, Janet, too, Whitewater is in Cobb County.
Well,
that's
I was going to say that Great American Adventure, right next to Whitewater.
Right, all that is, right, Whitewater, Six Flags, all Cobb County. Okay, so the story goes, and by the way, it comes out of Austell, Georgia, so there you have it. A 27-year-old woman is now being charged for her alleged involvement in the death of a Six Flags over Georgia employee last year. The woman faces felony involuntary manslaughter and 6 counts of reckless conduct charges, according to the warrants filed in the Cobb County Magistrate Court. The deadly incident happened on Sunday, October 1st of 2023, when a 27-year-old woman at the park was driving a 2004 Ford Econoline transporting several adults and 2 juveniles, who police said were all employees at the park. The passengers were in the rear cargo compartment of the van as they were driving through the theme park's property, according to police. One passenger, 43-year-old Andrea Kropp of Villa Rica, was ejected from the van as the van made its way through a left uphill turn on the harbor way. Authorities said Kropp sustained a serious head injury from the pavement. She was taken to Grady Hospital with life-threatening injuries, where police said she later died. According to recent warrants, the 27-year-old driver allegedly operated the van with no seats or seat belts in the cargo area of a sliding door, which did not have a way for Kropp to restrain herself, ultimately leading to the ejection. An online fundraiser that raised money for Kropp's services remembered her as a devoted mom and wife who loved fiercely. The fundraiser posted by Kropp's husband said she was deeply devoted to her children. Husband has old childhood friends, new online friends, and anyone who welcomed her into their lives. She loved so many people and was very unconditional in her love. The park previously issued the following statement when the incident happened back in October. Our hearts and our thoughts are extended to the family of the employee as well as all those impacted by this tragic automobile accident. There's a key word. Well, we are heartbroken, said Six Flags over Georgia Park President Dave Zillman. Immediate support is being provided to those affected by the accident. The park will continue to provide full support and assistance to the Cobb County Police as the investigation, as they investigate the accident. Now, I find that kind of interesting. You feel like she should be charged for this incident, first of all?
Well, did they say they didn't have seat belts?
It said, according to Reese Orange, the 27-year-old driver allegedly operated the van with no seats or seat belts in the cargo area with a sliding door, which did not have a way for Kropp to restrain herself, ultimately leading to the ejection.
Well, you know, I mean, you're taking chances. And you know, I feel like Kropp, she knew that there was no seatbelt and she had no way of restraining herself, but she was taking that chance anyway, you know. So if they do charge the driver, they should be like, what is it when they call, not murder,
involuntary manslaughter.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I feel, if anything, no. It should be probably that.
Well, now, I don't know, because...
Because they were all taking chances, so...
Right. Here's what it says. The woman faces felony, involuntary manslaughter. It's involuntary. She didn't, it was like, well, you...
Yeah, that's what I said, involuntary manslaughter. Yeah. But not saying murder. Yeah, because they were all taking chances. You know, it wasn't like she didn't know that it had no seat belts. She got in the vehicle anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she'll probably end up getting off. I think that even though they said involuntary manslaughter, I think the 27-year-old woman will probably get off because, like I said, they were all taking chances. I don't know. What do you think, Mike?
You know, to be honest, I don't think she should be charged for it. I really don't. Because this is a transport. According to the story, it says it is a transport van. What does it transport? Just equipment, this and the other, or is it? Was there an area that did have some seats, but the back area didn't? You know what I'm saying? I mean, I haven't really seen what the van looks like, and did it have seats?
And what kind of
did
transport?
You have in fact, what is it? What is the van used for? Is this the first time this has happened that someone has transported people in this van in the back area? Mm. You know, I have to look at all of that, to be honest. Look at all that. And then you look at it where when you're riding in somebody's car, how many times does a person tell you, open on your seatbelt?
Yeah, I am guilty because I'll jump in real quick and don't even think about fastening the seatbelt, and once we start going, then I say, "Oh," and I'm putting my seatbelt. But that's like I'm pulling out my driveway. I'm at the corner, and then I fasten my seatbelt. But I'm not too far from the corner. I'm right. You might as well say I'm the corner house.
Yeah, and then you look at it also, I mean, police are looking for people who don't have their seatbelt on, especially drivers, right? Of course, the person that's driving the car. What about the person in the backseat? What if they don't have on the seatbelt?
Right.
Do they pull them over for that? All four people must have on the seatbelt.
Right, and I have the sheriff's department with somebody from the police. I mean, the sheriff's department is always parked in the cut at the corner of my street, waiting for somebody to do a rolling stop, I just don't know.
Oh, you mean, where they just roll through the stop line, don't come to a complete stop.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
They're pulling people constantly, giving them tickets. Especially when it comes almost to the end of their fiscal, I guess, to get a certain count they have to have, I guess. At least it used to be that way. Yeah. They'll pull you over real quick.
Right.
And give you a ticket.
Their quota. What they call their quota of so many tickets within a certain amount of time. Some officers say that's not true, but I'm like, yes, it is. I know some officers, they told me, yes, it is. Okay, some will say no, others will say yes. They do have a quota to meet. So, but in this case, I really don't think this woman should be charged because it's, I don't know, it's, I kind of think that Six Flags is at fault.
Yeah.
I mean, because is that something?
Drink.
Yeah, was there something that, no path, is this a passenger van is what I'm wondering. If not, then right. Then she should be charged.
Yeah, they probably have another write-up on this because that's something that just recently happened. And I didn't find anything else on it yet. So, you know, I will be posting if there's a follow-up on whether she's indeed charged or not charged.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that we'll hear more about this, seeing that it is here in Clark County. I'm pretty sure we'll hear more about it and more information. But as of now, based on the information, based on the information that I'm seeing here, I don't think she should be charged. Or I got to see more of the particulars of regarding this whole story. There's something more to this.
It's almost like guilt by association when you are with someone and you don't know that person is going to do a crime, commit a crime, but because you're with that person, you're just as guilty, they say, you know. So by them all being in the vehicle, it's not just the driver. I feel they're all guilty in some way because they shouldn't have probably been in that type of vehicle without restraints.
You know, this makes me think of a story several years back that occurred here in Cobb County, by the way, of a little five-year-old boy that was hit by a vehicle. You might recall this, that was hit by a vehicle and killed, and they charged the mother for the death of her son. What had occurred is that they got off the bus, and instead of going to the corner across the street, they crossed right at, you know, where they got off the bus, because their apartment was right across the street. Mind you, there's a medium, a divider in the middle, and the boy was struck, and actually I was there after the fact when I was coming home from work and saw, you know, the paramedics, the police and everything had not got there yet. They're in the street and stopped and went over and they were trying to do CPR, and then finally the police came and sent the other. But the sad part about it is that the individual who hit the boy, this wasn't his first time hitting someone.
Oh, Lord.
He had hit a woman before. She didn't die, and he kept going. And he had his son in the vehicle, and he kept going. And fortunately, the next day they found out who it was, and they arrested him. So of course he wound up he's in prison, you know, for manslaughter. Of course, like you said, it's not murder because it wasn't intentional, but it was a manslaughter. And you know, I remember the court case on the news where, you know, the prosecution was really on the mob. Now, back to the fact that they said they should have walked to the corner to cross. You know, the intersections are so far apart in certain areas, right? I mean, you literally walk almost a block to get to an intersection to cross, and then you got to walk almost a block back to get to where you're going. So
if
that's
they
just
want
normal
them
for
a
people
minor
cross.
Infraction.
I'm sorry?
I said, is jaywalking a minor infraction? Is it?
Yeah, it's a
not.
Minor infraction. It's just a minor. It's not, you know, it's not, it's a misdemeanor. It's not a serious, but it's just minor. But, you know, I don't see that a lot. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't hear it a lot. Folks getting tickets for jaywalking. But like I said, I mean, in some cities, especially here, the intersections are so far apart, and the bus stops are, you know, right there in that midpoint. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I see people do it all the time. They'll get off the bus and they'll run across the street right at that point. The next intersection is about almost a half a block to a block away. You know, it's a little distance, and I don't know. It's pretty crazy because. because, you know, they are, now, if I'm not mistaken, in fact, I saw mm-hmm. a woman one day. I ran into her and her daughter, and I ran into them, and I spoke with them because, as I said, I was there after the fact, you know, they were trying to revive the little boy, and I spoke with her, and fortunately, the mother didn't wind up going to prison. Okay.
Well, good.
She was reprimanded. I can't remember what they got her, what they did, but I have to look it up. But she didn't wind up going to prison because, you know, that would have been sad for the fact that here your child is dead, right, by a person who has hit somebody before, right? Say that again.
I said she was already suffering from the loss of her child.
Correct. Correct, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, but that's what that story about the Six Flags made me think of where I'd have to really get more information to understand that one for the this woman being charged for the death of the woman falling out of the van, let's say. Okay, so let's go on to another one, and we're going to go to the Trumps. All right. So since there's two stories on the Trumps, you know what I got to do, right?
I was kind of, you know, we've been flooded in the news with Donald, and, you mm-hmm. know, and it was also about Melania's mother passing, you know, that I just figured maybe something a little different, you know, because.
Okay, so let's do this. Since we're going to talk about the Trumps, we got to play the opening theme for the Trumps. Okay, here we go. All right. Here we go now. From what I understand, Melania's mom had passed away, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
She did the eulogy for her mother's funeral.
Okay, so here's the story. Melania Trump delivers eulogy at mother Amalaje. I don't know. In her presence, the world seemed to shimmer. Okay, the Trumps joined widower Victor Navs, I guess, outside a Palm Beach church on Thursday to receive Amalaje's casket and honor her life. Melania, Donald, and Barron Trump gathered. So Donald was there. Gathered in Palm Beach on Thursday to remember the life of Melania's mother, who died at the age of 78 earlier this month. Okay. The Trumps were seen entering the church of Bethesda by the Sea, where the funeral service was held, alongside Victor Nas, Melania's father, and the late Melania's husband. Also at the funeral service were two of the former president's children from previous marriages, Tiffany Trump and Ivanka Trump. Oh, the boys weren't there, who attended with her husband, Jared. So wait a minute, what happened to Beavis and Butthead? You know, the other two sons. How come they didn't show up?
I don't know, but it seemed like they should have been there.
Maybe. Okay, well, one's Beavis, one's Butthead. Okay, so Beavis was probably somewhere shooting a lion or some crap like that in Africa. He loves to do stuff like that. And then Butthead, no telling what he probably forgot there was a funeral. But anyway, in a eulogy delivered Thursday morning, per the Associated Press, the former First Lady said of her mother, quote, "In her presence, the world seemed to shimmer with radiance and joy. Our bond was unbreakable." Now, did she actually write those words, or did she take them from someone like, you know, she's known to do? I'm not making joke of a death, but I'm just saying, you know, she is known to use so on and so. What is the term, Janet? Like she did with
plagiarizing.
Former person. Okay, yeah. Did she plagiarize on this one too? Okay, elsewhere in the speech, Melania 53 called her Melania 53. What? This is elsewhere in the speech, Melania 53 called her mother a, quote, ray of light in the darkest days. Now, she took that from somewhere. I've heard that somewhere. I've heard it in a book, a movie, something. I heard someone say that and spoke about their effortless conversations and have been living, or, well, the mom, have been living at the Trump's private Mar-a-Lago resort since the couple left the White House in 2021. Quote, rest in peace, my beloved mother. Melania closed her remarks. The AP reports that Melania touched her fingers to her lips and placed them on her mom's casket after ending the eulogy. Okay, the former First Lady announced her mother's death in a statement shared on X, formerly known as Twitter, writing, "It is with deep sadness that I announce the passing of my beloved mother." Okay, let me see, is there anything else? So she was entirely devoted to her husband. So. Okay. Okay, I'm just looking through, see if there's anything of any importance. Nothing really here to see on this one. This is about it.
No, she was talking about how her mother, they said, carried herself with grace, warmth, and dignity. My phone,
that's
my phone was cutting off.
They said, well, a source added that Barron, in particular, had grown a close relationship with his grandmother. There have been times when Barron has been with his grandparents more than with Melania, and a lot more than with Donald. Well, we know with, you know, that's something. You kind of wonder, does Barron really see his dad much? How much time does he really spend with his son? Interesting. Okay, so let's move on to another story, which is regarding the Trumps.
Well, we just hope they are able to get through this difficult time, you know, and, you know, just have faith in knowing that God heals all wounds and all grieving, you know, asking him, you know, be there for you to help them get through these difficult times. Because it is hard when you lose, you know, especially a mother, you know, even a family member, but a mother is even more difficult. I know me personally, I have a real close relationship with my children, and we all talk on a daily basis, you know, 90% of the time. You know, I can't go somewhere without making sure my phone is tied to my hip, you know, because they'll be sending the National Guard out looking for me. I'm serious. So I don't know what type of relationship she had, but her mother was living with them, you know, so she probably spent a lot of time with her mother, especially with Donald being out on the campaign trail.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to say. All right. Well, let's look at this next story regarding the Trumps, and of course, you know what I gotta do. Donald Trump's marriage to Melania is allegedly, I stress that.
Yeah, I thought that was
interesting. Business and not pleasure. Now, this story, this comes from, it's called Blast, so I don't know, entertainment. I don't know how, but now, well, let's see. This was just brought up yesterday, Friday the 19th. Former President Donald Trump and his wife Melania's marriage might not exactly be what it appears to be. on the outside, the couple seems to be in love, making joint appearances at events and traveling together. However, a new report claims the duo marriage is merely a business partnership and isn't based on romance.
No, well,
I can see
I'm
that.
I'm trying to understand where's the, you know, but what, well, okay, as a business partnership, in what way? Is what I'm on. Now let me finish reading.
Well,
this
I don't know about
bit.
The business
According
partnership. But I've seen Melania swat her husband's hand when he wanted to hold her hand for,
yeah,
I guess, pictures.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
she walks in front of him or behind him, but not with him. You know, it's always like there's some tension there. It was
yeah.
that way
well,
all the way up till the main election. You know.
Well, let me read this other part of this here. It says, according to a report, Trump and Melania's marriage is devoid of any emotional connection. The couple allegedly doesn't often share intimate moments, indicating their relationship is more like a business arrangement than pleasure or a romantic one. Goes on to say Melania's purpose is reportedly to help him maintain the look of having a happy home and also play a part and helping his ambition to return to the White House when the U.S. elections are held later this year. Quote, very simply put, Donald is with Melania because her presence could help him with the presidencies again, a source told the National Enquirer. Ooh, the National Enquirer is involved in this conversation. Quote, she provides a living, breathing defense against claims he's a serial cheater and sexual predator. Sometimes life in Trump world is too much even for her, the source added. It's unclear if this alleged status of their marriage is a recent development or has been the case for a long time. Melania will make diplomatic appearances for Donald Trump. Already reports have swirled about how the former First Lady intends to play a more public role in her husband's 2024 White House comeback. It is known that in line with this goal, Melania has an agreement with Trump to participate in diplomatic appearances for him, including campaign events and super PAC dinners. Quote, Trump and his family are so secure that he will become president again that insiders at Mar-a-Lago say he's reached an agreement with Melania to step up top-tier diplomatic appearances in 2024. An insider told. According to the source, Melania believes she is better prepared this time, particularly as she won't be distracted by the responsibility of caring for her 17-year-old son, Darren. The source has added, Melania realizes it's her time to join the ranks of historic first ladies and leave her mark on history. She feels better prepared for her potential role the second time around. Well, I mean, I can agree with that. I think that that's something that, when she had the son.
But Michael,
yeah, when she had
it
her son,
right
she,
under that.
Say that again?
She renegotiated her prenup. What you just got to reading, it says she reportedly renegotiated her prenup.
Okay, Melania reportedly renegotiated her prenup with Donald. So it says Melania's interest in making history isn't the only thing that might have convinced her to stay in her alleged cold marriage with Trump. She reportedly renegotiated her prenuptial agreement with the ex-president for the third time during their marriage, securing extra benefits for herself and her son, Darren, whom she shares with the billionaire mogul. She shares. An insider noted about the new prenup. This is at least the third time Melania has renegotiated the terms of her marital agreement. Melania is most concerned about maintaining and increasing a substantial trust for their son Darren. Another insider claimed that the renegotiation was a concession from Trump to stop Melania from leaving after she allegedly wanted to divorce him due to his growing legal scandals. Quote, she particularly had her bags packed but Donald made concessions and renegotiated their prenup for at least a third time to convince her to stay, a report alleged. Now I'm hearing she gets a guaranteed $100 million payout even if the marriage ends in a divorce. $100 million. Well, she might have to move kind of quickly, because if things go the way that some people think is going to go, and if they go the way that, you know, the prosecution wants to go, he may not have $100 million. So, I don't know. So,
yeah, I kind of thought the same thing, Michael. I was on the same page about the $100 million and all of his legal wars that he's going through.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. But, you know, I don't know. That's interesting, because I have to give the Trumps a lot of credit. Of all the children, the one who is not involved in this, or not, you know, and I'm glad the media leaves him out, his parent, is the youngest son. Leaving
well,
out.
Tiffany, really. Tiffany also.
Well,
those are the only two.
Yeah. Because it seems like Tiffany doesn't seem to be like one of Donald Trump's favorites. Don Dear, of course, is a favorite. Well, I'm sorry. The daughter is the favorite. Ivanka. Then the other son, Don Jr. You know, I think that's the order that it goes from what I see. That's the order that it goes. Tiffany seems to be lost in the mix. I don't know why I say that, but she just seems like she's just... Oh, yeah, and here's my other daughter, you know. It's like, oh, yeah, and her, too. You know?
Yeah. Kind of forgot about her. But a lot of people forget about her, because we only saw her maybe on the campaign trail a couple of times, and, you know, she was there at the inauguration, but that's about it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah. Yeah, so I don't know.
But it might be good for her be involved, you know, because Don Jr. and Eric, you know, are facing charges, you know, penalties because of their, you know, involvement with the business.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so let's wrap this up on the Trumps. What occurred the other day was this the final arguments that they had regarding this last case? Did they just go through the final arguments? Am I correct?
On which case, though? Because on Eugene Carroll, you talking about that case?
Wasn't the
Because Trump wasn't there. He wasn't there, but the lawyers, the judge was, he wasn't really too happy with the lawyers. He was acting like the female lawyer needed to go back to law school. Because of some of the things that she was saying, you know, it's just been unreal. You know, just like last week, you know, for the lawyer to actually say that Trump can order the SEALs 6 to go and assassinate one of his political opponents, you know, if that's true, you know, Biden can do the same. But, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. They would have a fit if Biden was to say something like that, you know. So
right,
what makes
right.
it good?
Hello, Bring It Boy. How you doing? I see Bring It Boy here. Hello, Mr. K, and to Janet. And if he is looming around, Officer Crenshaw. Oh, okay. Crenshaw's not here, but he's going to join us next week. And let's see somebody else here on the board. Kristoff. Okay, hey, Kristoff. So they did the closing arguments, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where does it go now? Janet?
I guess for the judge to make a decision. If you're talking about the Eugene Carroll, the Jean Carroll case, you know, because they were waiting for the jury, and then to make their, I guess it goes to the jury, and then the judge makes the final decision.
Mm-hmm.
I,
so, what
I
do you think
know.
The outcome is going to be? Is she going to win a second case?
I think she's going to win her case. Because of even during the trial, Trump was still saying things that was not good, you know, about her.
I saw a story regarding where he was allegedly he was speaking kind of out loud within earshot of the jury, making little comments,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
the prosecution had to tell the judge, hey, tell him to kind of keep it down, you know, he's saying stuff. Brigham Boy says,
but
she gets paid again. So.
Yeah, she's getting paid again, sure is. Because he was making
mm-hmm.
comments, and you can sway the jury. You know, even when they were doing the selection, the jury pool selection, Trump was saying things, you know. If it was like one person, for instance, said that they made calls for Biden, that was a no-go for them, you know. Mm-mm. Because that person made
calls. But here's the thing. The man doesn't know when to shut up, though.
You know, that's
had
true.
He not said anything after the first time, you know, it's just like OJ, to be honest. If you would have just shut up and left everything alone, you wouldn't
mm-hmm.
be in the situation you're in, right? If OJ would have shut up, not said anything, he wouldn't have, and not done what he did, he wouldn't have wound up going to prison like he did. Just go down to Florida, shut your ass up, you know. Because, you know,
right.
they can't take his money from the NFL. But Trump, the same thing. After the first time she won, he should have just kept his mouth shut, not said anything about that woman again. He's thinking by saying something, it's going to make things better, you know, and his fan base or his followers, you know, yeah, that's right, dog, to tell her what, you know, say this, say that. And then here she is probably going to wind up getting more money. Which is going to be kind of like, more to say what kind of character he has moving forward.
Right. But that money, you know, that she was asking for,
right.
I swear, I think the judge is going to grant her even more than what she asked for. Because, you know, they were trying to prove a point that she became famous because of all this. Yeah, famous, all right, but her life has been a living hell. You know, if you got people constantly harassing, saying they want to kill you, you know, calling you all kinds of names, it can be nerve-wracking.
Right, right.
You know, nobody
yeah,
should
of
have
course,
to live
if you got
like
a death threat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, anybody, if you got death threats, you know, I mean, anybody, you know, someone saying, hey, I'm going to kill you, or, you know, and according to some of the stuff I read that she said that were, you know, she would get letters, she would get phone calls, she was scared to do this, scared to do that. I mean, none of us have gone through that, but imagine if that were the case where every time you leave your house, you're scared, you think someone, or if someone looks at you, you know, the wrong way, like, oh, my God, you know. So, yeah, I get that. But again, had he just kept his mouth shut, he wouldn't be
right.
going through all this.
Right.
He
wants to be a martyr, but he's causing all the things that are happening to him because of the things that he's saying. You know, nobody is above the law.
Saying.
Yeah. And he is not, he wants a complete immunity. But the thing is, he's no longer president. They've been treating him like he's still president of the United States. That is not fair to
Okay,
Biden.
So let me look at what okay, so let me throw this out here. Bring It Boy says, right, Mike, shut up. But he did nothing wrong, and she went on shows to put the pressure on herself. Okay, let me see if I'm understanding that the way he did nothing wrong, and she went on shows to put the pressure on herself. Okay, so if she went on shows, did she also well, hold on. Let me finish what I'm asking.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
if she did so, if she went on the shows, okay, and if I'm, reading this right, well, Pretty Boy said, did she put the pressure on herself for him to? I'm going to assume probably like, well, I'm just going to assume, I'll see if Bring It Boy can respond. I'm going to assume probably something like maybe a 60 Minutes or a Good Morning America or whatever, one of those type of shows is possibly what they're speaking of, that she went on those shows. So I'll see if Bring It Boy, what shows Bring It Boy did she go on, if you can recall. Let's see if we can figure that one out. Because even if she did,
after the judge said that he wasn't supposed to say anything else about her, he went on a campaign stump and raked her over the coals. That's why she took him back to court.
But Janet, listen for a moment though, and I think that's what Brigid Boy is saying, that where even though did she have the right to go on the shows and speak about it on her side too? I think I'm getting what Brigid Boy is saying. You know, if he can't say anything, how is she permitted to say stuff?
Because she was the
How
victim.
Is she, you know, allowed to say stuff about regarding the whole thing? Let's see. Brigid Boy says, okay, Mike, I will get that for you. The shows. Okay. I have 909-732 waving their hand. Let me go ahead and open up their mic and see what their question or comment is. 909-732, your mic is open. Who's calling?
Hello, good afternoon. This is Suzette, Bringing It Boy's wife.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Suzette.
Hey,
Suzette. Must know your number by now.
Yeah.
It's been a minute.
It's been a while.
Been a minute since you called in.
Yep. So I thought I would help kind of shorthand, and sometimes it doesn't come across all that clear. So her first case against Trump, she wrote a book and about her memoirs and stuff. And in that book, it talked about Trump and her encounter with him at Bergdorf's. But she never filed any charges or anything like that. And so it started to get out, you know, amongst the media as far as that part of the book. And so that started to come out as far as what she said about Trump and what he had done. And so she said that when she was going on her book tour, that all of these people that were interviewing her about her book wanted to talk about that specific piece about Trump. So Trump got a wind of it, and he's like, I don't know this woman. I've never seen this woman. This woman is not my type. And in her own words, she said she wasn't going to, quote, she wasn't going to sue Trump or file charges on him until he said those words, that he didn't know her and she wasn't his type. And so there was an attorney that who is he works for, the judge, or he works for somebody higher up, his last name is Reed, who encouraged her to file a lawsuit against him for defamation and the rape charges. Well, he didn't get convicted of the rape charges, but they made him pay for defamation in the lawsuit. And so he continued to open his big mouth, and because of that, now she's taking him back to court. But she continues to go on these interviews, and it's like that's where the pressure comes from, as far as putting pressure on herself, because she's putting herself out there instead of, she won her last case. If you don't like what he's saying, don't listen to it, and just you know, go home, be quiet and go home, and you've got your mm-hmm. got your money and whatever. But if you continue to expose yourself out there, you're basically opening yourself to risk, which is not good in either case. I mean, as far as she should be able to say what she wants to say without being attacked or verbally, you know, accosted by people on social media. But unfortunately, people are mean and ugly.
Mean, yeah.
But here's the thing. I have to ask this though. But okay, and I get that, and I agree with you. You know the things that. But see, here we're talking about. He was not found guilty for rape. He was found guilty of defamation of character. Right. Okay. So that's in the books. That's when it's gone. Okay. So let's finish out. So. For her to go and speak on that particular case, right? Mm-hmm. She has a right to do so. It's documented. Mm-hmm. It's in the court records. She can do that. But for him to go ahead and to be honest, I think that he was a fool to let that, you know, bother him. They already wrapped it up. Man, just don't say nothing about it. All she's going to get is the money that they told you to pay her. Leave it alone. But here you're going to go ahead and you took the bait. See, that's just like waving the carrot, right? You took the bait, and now you got yourself in court again against her, and probably wind up having to pay out some more money. Now, that, now, correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't she? I mean, I don't think that. When you say pressure, I get it. Where you know the things that were, you know, the news media after the first trial or the first case, they're going to want to talk to her. She's going to go and talk to them and talk about that. But we already know.
Mm-hmm.
We already know what happened, right?
Right.
They're going to try to dig for more information. There's really nothing new to the story. But now, by him opening up his big mouth, he created another story, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, he should have kept his mouth shut. He just should have went on with his life and let it alone. I agree. But
also,
on the same note, too. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I just wanted to say the lawyer who gave her information, Eugene Carroll, that she still could press charges and take him to court was Kellyanne Conway's husband, because Trump wanted to sue George Conway for giving Eugene Carroll that information.
Mm-hmm.
He was the lawyer who gave her the information saying that she still had a case.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what? Well, I wish I could be a fly on the freaking wall in the Conway house. I really wish I could. I wonder how did it. I really wish I could. Because, I mean, think about it. She was Trump's right hand, and then he's always in Trump's, you know, he's always on Trump. I'm like, how do you all operate with each other? You know, how do you even deal with each other when you're so far, you know, sided when it comes to Donald Trump, so far apart when it comes to Donald Trump? And now with what you're saying about where he gave the information, he's the one.
Yeah, he's
they
he
ought to have
said
a sitcom with those two. Yeah,
he came on MSNBC and said it himself.
They ought to have a sitcom.
But
they should have a reality show.
One other thing. It was a couple of days after the case was the jury made their decision and everything, and they had said that Trump had to pay Eugene Carroll. Well, then that's when he went on the stump and said he didn't know her. But when he was interviewed by her attorney and he said he didn't know her, and then he looked at a picture and said it was Margot, one of his wives.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah,
she
who's
said,
that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he said, and she and the lawyer told him, said no, that's Jean Carroll. And so then he was like, well, the picture's blurry. The picture wasn't blurry. It wasn't blurred at all.
That's all
you know.
Yeah,
so you gonna say that
I
the person was ugly and you didn't know her, but then you thought she was your wife in a picture.
Your former wife, yeah. Yeah, I saw that photo, yeah.
To show you, like, oh, okay. you know, he thought that I was his wife. So yeah. It goes to show he didn't know her, who she was claiming to be. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, so it's and the judge every time Alba, Trump's lawyer, had said, because in this case they're not supposed to bring up the other case, the one that she won on death.
Correct.
Right.
They're not supposed to bring up any of that. And so the Eugene's lawyer kept bringing up questions about that. And what's her name? Serena Alba or something.
Well,
so anyway, Trump's lawyer.
I thought it was Trump's lawyer who was bringing stuff up. Because she needed to go back to learn about being a lawyer.
Right. He kept telling her to sit down and shut up. And this wasn't an objection, and I'll allow it. And so basically anytime she objected, the judge was saying no. You know, basically you're overruled. And mm-hmm. he did tell her to sit down and be quiet, you know, at times. But then Eugene Carroll's lawyer was allowed to ask these questions, and Albert was bringing up the fact that we're not supposed to bring these things up. They're in the past case. And that's
mm-hmm.
why I'm objecting. And he's like, I don't want to hear it. You're overruled. Sit down.
Mm-hmm.
He even told her at one point at the beginning when she first objected to stand up if she's going to object, make an objection.
Mm-hmm.
And when you address this court and you object, you better stand up in my courtroom.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah, he was on a case big time.
He was.
Hmm.
Oh, Alina Haba. That's right. Yeah, so they were just
Alina
Haba,
Trump's lawyer.
Yes, I couldn't remember her first name. So anyway, I'll let you guys get back to it. I just wanted to clarify those things up. Thank you so much for taking my call. And have a great weekend. Thank you. All right.
Appreciate
we'll talk to you guys later.
Thank
bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye. All right, thanks for her call. Appreciate that. Yeah, you know, that's interesting. That's interesting. But like I said, he should have kept his big mouth shut. He really should have kept his mouth shut. And everything would have been okay, you know.
Yeah.
And just
even when the lawyer asked Trump during his interview with the lawyer, with Gene Carroll's lawyer, about being famous and, you know, being able to grab women and do anything with them. And he said,
mm-hmm.
yeah, he believed it. You know, so then, I mean, all the way to the point where she said, so do you think you're famous? He said, you can say that. You know, it's okay, you know, for me to do whatever with women and get away with it because
mm-hmm.
he thought he was famous.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's
anyway,
look at one more story here. Let's close out the political thing. And it's not about Trump per se, but it's a story that's going out regarding the Georgia district attorney prosecuting Trump in spotlight over affairs. And according to this story, Atlanta, Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis hired attorney Nathan Wade to lead prosecution of Donald Trump and 18 others over efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Now, allegations of a romantic relationship between Willis and Wade are raising questions about his past work and qualifications and threatened to taint one of four criminal cases against the former president. She has defended her hiring of Wade, who has little prosecutorial experience and has not directly denied a romantic relationship. The claim surfaced last week in a motion filed by a defense attorney representing a former Trump campaign staffer who did not provide concrete proof. The lawyer is seeking to get the indictment tossed and to remove Willis and Wade from the case. The district attorney's relative silence for over a week has allowed Trump and other critics to exploit the claims as the former president tries to return to the White House. But while it's while it's created a political storm, the legal implications are less clear. It's a quote, this is a in a quote, it's certainly a huge political problem. It is certainly scandalous and salacious, if true, said Anthony Michael Kreese, a Georgia State University law professor who was following the case. But he questioned whether it affects prosecutors' ability to handle the case professionally. Quote, where is the line between an ethical lapse or a political misjudgment and something that kind of taints this office, he asked. Outside of any effect of this case, Willis, an elected Democrat, is up for re-election this year, and this could become a campaign issue depending on how she ultimately responds. The motion filed last week by lawyer Ashley Merchant, who represents former Trump campaign staffer and one-time White House aide Michael Roman, alleges that Willis paid Wade large sums and benefited personally when he, in turn, used his earnings to take her to Napa Valley, Florida, and the Caribbean. Wade has been paid, Wade has been paid more than $650,000 at a rate of $250 an hour since his hiring, according to records Merchant cited. Wade did not respond to an email seeking comment. The judge has scheduled a February 15th hearing on the matter and ordered prosecutors to file a response by February 2nd. Woo, 600, no, wait a minute. Let me break that down. $250 an hour? Really? Some people don't even make that in a week, let alone a day. $250 an hour, 8 hours in a day. Ooh. Lord have mercy. They got perfectly manicured nails and everything because they ain't doing nothing physical per se, right? What do you think about that story, Janet? That's $250 an hour. So what do you think? He hasn't denied it, according to the story.
Some lawyers do get paid that, or even more. It depends on
that.
How good that lawyer is.
I know there's people that make more. I'm just saying, when they break it down, $650,000 a year, $250 an hour, that's a lot of money. I know there's a lot of lawyers who make even more than that.
And it's because he spent a lot of time on the case, spent a lot of time when they were doing the RICO, you know. So I could see it adding up. You know, he was making more than her, but she was paying employees, other lawyers. It wasn't like, you know, I think the wife is grasping for straws. And was it someone on the other side wanting to tarnish her so they can throw the case out? They've been trying some of everything anyway. So is this another grasp for grasping straws? What do you think?
Okay, let me finish here. Brigham Boy says she paid an expert RICO cases. Oh, you mean the RICO Act? I guess this is supposed to be hit $150 an hour, an expert. Okay, but I'm just trying to understand, you know, how do they come to these dollar amounts, you know? You know, it's like, you know.
A lawyer can charge
let me finish. I keep wondering, how do they come to these amounts? Is this like, let's make a deal, you know? It's like, I need you to testify and give your expertise. Okay, well, you're going to have to pay me $500. Nah. Let's make a deal. How about, you know, like Pawn Stars. I can give you $450. Make it $475. Nah, I can give. You know, is that how they work this out? You know,
no.
I mean, the money's up in the air. The money's up in the air. You know, but $250 an hour. Again, I say, That's more money than some people make in a whole week.
Yeah, even in divorce cases, sometimes lawyers take your case, and if they win, they get in a certain amount. If you're suing somebody, they automatically, you know, will take, if they win the case, you have to pay them a certain amount, you know. I know
so,
I hired
yeah,
a so, lawyer.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that same thing. I'm saying that where it's just like let me say this. I understand that. That's what I'm saying. That where, you know, you see all these. I'm sure everybody here, you know, listening, you see stuff on television every day. Motlick and whoever, this lawyer, Ken Nugent and everything. We won't charge you a dime unless we win the case, you know. You see them all day, every day. Okay, the strong arm of the law. You know, all these lawyers, you see them all day on television. And granted, right, you know, if they win the case, then they will get paid. But they're going to get a good chunk of that case, of that money. You know that, right? They're going to get a good chunk of it, or whatever you
They get a good percentage of whatever the case is.
They're gonna get a good tip, but what I'm saying, Janet, I know they get a certain percentage. What I'm saying is this: that they're gonna get a good amount. Trust me, they're gonna get a good amount of that money, because if they have to bring in, you know, an expert or this, that, and the other, depending on what the case is. You know, I mean, they have to, you know, you have to look at what the cost is for them to get you off of that. I was just watching a story the other day where this man was accused of murdering his wife. And the prosecution was hell-bent that he killed his wife. But he was found not guilty. Even his wife's family believed there's no way he could have done that. Right? But like they said, as I said in the story, if not for the money that his family had to do the investigation, to do all this stuff, to look at the evidence and everything correctly, he probably would have been in prison for the rest of his life. So they had to spend a lot of money, right, for his freedom. And granted, there are, and even he said, when they interviewed him, said, you know what, he said, I saw a lot of guys in prison that they just don't have the resources, they don't have the money, you know, to get the type of representation that I got.
No, they have court-appointed attorneys.
And he said, well, let me finish, please. He said this one thing that was so interesting. He said, you know, that he used to think that if you're in prison, you must be guilty. He said, but okay. Until he found himself behind bars, he said he don't believe that anymore. He said because he believes there are some people in prison who is not guilty. They just don't have the money for proper representation.
Now,
and
can
I
say
agree.
Something? Because
sure.
They got a court-appointed attorney, most court-appointed attorneys automatically want you to plead guilty. They push you through like you're just a number. And I know for a fact this happens.
I know for a fact, too. I mean, I know, too. And
so,
the thing is that we're court-appointed attorneys have court-appointed attorneys. They're doing what they call pro bono, right? That's the term, pro bono. So they're not getting – well, they're getting paid, yeah, because that's their job. But they're not getting paid like a – let's say, for instance, a defense attorney that's doing private practice. Yeah, a defense attorney that does private practice is going to get what he wants. Court appointed, they get like a salary. And they have so many cases that they have to deal with. So they don't have the time or the resources to investigate every case the way that it should be. They don't. So you get pushed through the system. I know that. And that's what I'm saying. That's what that person was saying.
But can I say something? Can I say something? I had a case where I wanted to get my long-term disability because my job was trying to deny me this after 30 years of working there. No, 25 years. They was trying to deny me. So I had to get an attorney. Well, that attorney had to get a certain percentage. She won the case. I got that $47,000, but I had to pay her $15,000 of that $47,000 of back pay. And it was only for a few months. It was only for a few months, but the price was high. But if she won the case, that's what the bottom line was.
Okay.
I would have gave her everything to get my long-term disability because I'm still getting it.
Okay, Bring It Boy says, money buys words. If it doesn't fit, you mustn't quit. Okay, that's all right. So that bought words. If it well, the thing is where, you know, that was regarding that case, that was a very interesting part of that case regarding the gloves. If it doesn't fit, you mustn't quit. Right. So, but again, like I said, you know, when it comes to court cases, and look at some of the cases that we've seen of individuals who have spent many years behind bars, and then all of a sudden, you have a, what do they call it, the something project, the ones who look at certain cases and do the investigation. They do it, you know, they take on cases, but they don't take on every case. But they do find where, wait a minute. And they go back and they reevaluate or they reinvestigate and come to find out that this person is not guilty of the crime. But they don't spend all this time in jail. It goes back to, like I said, if you don't have the money for representation, you may get railroaded in a court of law. You may get railroaded. We all know that that happens. But like I said, the story I watched the other day, in fact, this guy was, he had a twin brother, in fact, and they accused him of killing his wife. But his wife's family didn't believe he did it either. That's what was the trip out part, is that the wife's family was like, no, we don't believe he did it. But the police and the prosecution, he hasn't done it. But having that money to do all that forensic testing and those experts and all that stuff that we're talking about changed that whole thing to where the jury said, not good. So that makes a difference. That definitely makes a difference. Let's see here. I want to get into another topic. I know. Let me say the time is now 7:20. We're going to take a quick break to come back. You know, there's something that we take for granted every day, you guys, and I thought it'd be interesting just do a little research on it. We deal with it every day, right? And I just want to do a little research on something. I know you guys probably saying, what is it, Mike? Come on, man, spill the beans. Well, I'm gonna spill the beans in a moment. But in the meantime, we're going to take a quick music break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the TMGS. You're on the TMGN.
Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. But Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force of truth. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to sinners. tell me to break out of the country and into more countries. Past I'd burst into Richmond, where the ghost of childhood haunts me. Walk the road my forefathers walked, climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came, my family tree, my family name. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Take me to another.
Down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess of baby. Many journeys to freedom made in vain. My brothers on the corner playing kettle games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. He said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth. And he was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Lord, allow me to drink some more. He said, what I am searching for are the answers to all which are in front of me. The ultimate truth started to get blurry. For some strange reason it had to be. It was all a dream about Tennessee.
Take me to
TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. That was Arrested Development with Tennessee. Man, they don't make music like that. Well, I guess they do. They just don't play it on the radio like they used to, right? You got to go to, you know, what is it, Sirius Radio and stuff like that to find these type of songs. But that's Tennessee. But hey, you guys, thank you for being here with us. We got about another half hour to go on the show. And by the way, let me let you know about this. On Sunday, same bat time, same bat channel at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Central. Tune in to a show that's here on the network called, what's the name of the show again? Oh, True Spoken. Okay. And that's with your host, Big Speech, better known as Darren Reynolds. Okay, or Darren Reynolds, better known as Big Speak. Great show, young man. He's got a great, great show, great topics. I'm really glad that he's joined the network, and he's on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern here on TMGM. Let's see. Okay, so let me point back to football, which I mentioned earlier in the show. I was watching this game, and, well, it's over with for the Texans. The score is now 31-10 in favor of the Ravens. And the Ravens are killing it. They really are. Got to get them credit. Great team. And The Texans had a great run this year. Rookie quarterback for the Texans, C.J. Stroud, did great this year. Rookie head coach did a great job this year for the Texans. They'll be back next season, I'm pretty sure. But, yeah, great game. Another game coming up, I believe it's San Francisco against who are they playing? I got to pull that up. But there's another game on coming up shortly around 8:30 this evening. And then two games tomorrow, and then after those two games tomorrow, it becomes the AFC-NFC championship games, divisions, I guess, not divisions, I'm sorry, conference championship games will come up after that. So now I got to find another team to roll with, you guys. I was going with the Texans. I thought they were going to pull this one out. But unfortunately, it looks like they're not. 31-10 right now, 4 minutes left. All right, so let's go to our next topic. What is it? Well, something that we deal with every day, and it's interesting how it started. Janet and I were talking the other day, and I said, you know, it'd be something kind of interesting to talk about. Maybe you guys think it is, or maybe you think it's not. Barcoding. Everything you purchase pretty much has a barcode on it. They scan it, and there it is. Rings it up, gets the description. It's on just about every package, everything from clothing to toys to food to, you know, just everything. So the history of barcodes, I thought it's kind of interesting. It definitely helps with inventory, right? I know that. But how did it all start? So, barcodes were invented by Norman Joseph Woodman and Bernard Silver in 1949. However, it wasn't until April 3rd of 1973, okay, that the UPC, better known as the Universal Product Code, barcode, was adopted as a standard for use in retail stores in the United States, and the first barcode was scanned on June 26 in 1974 in a Marsh store in Troy, Ohio. The UPC barcode is a series of vertical lines of varying thickness and spaces that represent a numerical code which can be scanned by a barcode reader to identify a product or item. The information is stored only across the barcode, hence ID barcodes, to make it easy to print, and the height of the barcode just makes it easier for laser scanners to find the lines. Since this introduction, the barcode has gone through various iterations and advancements, including the 2D barcode and the QR code. The 2D barcode can store more information than the traditional barcode and is often used in shipping and logistics. 2D barcodes store data in their height and width and require imagers, cameras, to scan, hence the show. To scan, hence the slow depth of the laser barcode scanner. The QR code is a type of 2D barcode that can be scanned using a smartphone camera and has become popular for advertising and marketing purposes. Impact on modern society. The barcode has had a significant impact on modern society, particularly in the areas of retail and logistics. It has made it easier and more efficient to keep track of inventory, prices, and sales data, which has led to better supply chain management and reduced costs. Additionally, it has made it easier for consumers to find and purchase products and has facilitated the growth of online shopping and self-scanning. Now, Janet, you said it's been around a long time. It was created, like I said, back in the 1940s, but it really didn't get kicked off until the 70s. That's pretty interesting, don't you think? Hello?
Yes. Yes, I remember when it started being more popular in the early 70s. You know, because everybody made a big deal out of it. All the stores switched everything around. You know, where you used to go to the store and you had regular labels, all of a sudden you had the barcode. You know, they were still telling you what the product was and the cost, but you had the barcode. You know, so yes, it has been out for a while. That's why I was the other day I was saying it was nothing new. Yes, the QR code is newer because they came out with that recently. I have a scanner on my phone that I use a lot because everybody is going switching over, you know. Go with the flow.
Well, what I find interesting about it is that we're in that, come on, I want to talk about this, because, again, I deal with them every day. And it's, again, like the story said, it is it's very useful as far as inventory and tracking it. Mm-hmm. Every item has its own specific barcode. You think about it, and where there's millions of barcodes out there. Every product,
yeah.
You know, when they make the packaging, every product has that barcode on it, right?
Easy
and that every product has a barcode on it. And the thing is that where now there's some barcodes, let's say, for instance, let's say if you buy a product from a store, you buy something from Walmart, and I'm sorry, let's say from Home Depot. And let's say it's something that is a Home Depot product. Let's say like they're rigid tools. You know, they have that's a Home Depot brand. Rigid tools. If you go to a Lowe's and they try to scan it, it's not going to come up because that barcode is not in their system. So they know that's not their product, right? But now, both of those stores sell, I'll just throw it out there, at the cash register, both of those stores sell M&Ms, right? You know, little snacks. That barcode is going to be in both of those store systems. So it will read that. Because they carry that same product. You follow me? They carry that same product. And this is across the nation. This is where, you know, certain things that certain stores carry will not show up in another store's inventory. It will not show up.
Barcoding also allows the owner of the store, you know, automatically let them know when the product is low and they need more because that barcode is being scanned. So it automatically will let the person know it's time to buy more. Or it might be set up where the system automatically puts the order in.
Well, it's okay, so that is the case with Walmart, that right. What they do at Walmart is what they call, when they scan it, is that where you go through with your phone, your store phone, or even your personal phone, if you have the information or the app on your phone, what they do is that they go through and every item that is in their back rooms or their, you know, in their back area, what they call the back room, gets a sticker or a tag on that box. That box might have, you know, 10 or 12 of that item in it. It knows the quantity that's in the box. And what happens is that when you put it to that setting and you scan that QR code, not the barcode, but the QR code, it will tell you that, hey, look, you need to pull this. This item needs to go because it knows how much has already been sold that you had already put out on the floor. And so what you do, you hit it, what happens, it lights up a little blue box, right, where that QR code is, and you tap that little blue box This is like on a camera now. And it'll turn green. It'll say pick. And you hit yes, and you pick it. So now the system believes that you pulled that from the inventory and put it out onto the floor for sale. If you don't pull something, the system will automatically reorder. Or if you show zero, the system will automatically reorder. But you better make sure you don't have it in the store, because the system will keep ordering it till you have too much of that damn product. You know, better know where it is, because everything is assigned to a location of either it's in what they call top stock, which is your overheads that you see on the floor when you go into stores, you know, their inventory up top, but then they have stuff that might be in the back. So you have to make sure you check for everything. But the amazing thing to me is just that the fact that the I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I was going to say, could you get in trouble if you scan and say you're pulling and you don't pull, you know, and end up ordering more? That's a person's error and not the computer or the barcode, you know.
I don't know about get in trouble. I mean, because there's times that where, you know, stuff gets
Do
misplaced and probably put the wrong.
That's all I'm asking.
Answer the question. I'm trying to answer that where sometimes what happens is that where there are certain items, right, that might have multiple barcodes. There could be multiple barcodes for a particular item. For instance, like, let me give an example. Let's say like cars, let's say Matchbox cars. They can have different barcodes for different styles of those cars. They can have different barcodes, but they can also fall under one barcode, which is crazy. It really can, because then what happens is that you can scan that, but then on the screen it will show you that, okay, well, there's other ones that have a different barcode, but they're tied into the same product per se. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's actually the same thing. They will ship out a box of, like, again, like I said, it's Matchbox cars, and it might be a box that have, you know, five different models of Matchbox cars, and all five of them have a different barcode, but then they have like one or it'll say that, but they still fall under the same location for these five different barcodes. You follow me? So sometimes folks can get confused. It'll ask, do you want to pick the whole thing, where there might be two different products in there with two different barcodes, two different products in the same box. And it's asking, are you pulling both products or just this particular one? So you better pull the whole thing if you're going to save the whole thing. Otherwise, you have to open up that box and pull that one specific product out of the two and leave the other product in the system. Right? That's how it works. So the barcoding, again, was created back in 1949, became the first barcode was scanned, and as I said, in the 1970s. Now the QR code is the newest thing, and that's interesting, the QR code. I guess it's safe to say that where they're running out of numbers for the barcode. And now they've come up with a new system with the QR code. It's just amazing to me that, you know, the technology and the things that, you know, that are possible now with different ways of inventory and tracking things. Not perfect, but it seems to be working pretty well.
I know the QR code works well, because I mean, people have been using it, and it hasn't been causing any issues. I mean, you can look at TV, and they put a QR code up there, and all you got to do is hit the and scan it.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Well, it's just like I was saying about the lawyers. Even this one, what's his name? He's been around for one call. That's all. He's got an advertisement where he puts up a QR code. Everybody's using the QR code now. Not just in television, but even in stores. You know, you scan a QR code and it takes you to a website. Gives you the information, see how the product works and everything. So technology is really amazing now. It really is. And by the way, let me give a PSA, a public service announcement. People, this is 2024. Actually, today is January the 20th. Now, I gave you all a pass as far as having your Christmas lights up, after the first. Gave you all a pass. I said, I get it. It's been cold out there. Don't want to get on that ladder and take it down. Right? Do me a favor. Stop turning on the damn lights. Christmas is gone. It's New Year's. There's people who are still turning on their Christmas lights down. Still got them on. Really?
I don't see anything wrong with it.
I do. Maybe you don't, but I do. Why?
Well, maybe they got their put the lights up late, or it might be it could have been a person.
Okay, you give them
a family member.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Janet, my co-host here, is trying to defend y'all that still have your Christmas lights on. Okay, so if you want to pay an extra a higher light bill, go ahead.
Yeah, that's them. It ain't coming out of your pocket.
No, that's not what I'm talking about, okay? Chill out. I'm saying, turn them off. Come on now. Save yourself some money. Yeah, now, I know some folks who leave their lights up year-round. Okay, but why would you leave your lights on in the middle of the month?
Each its own, Michael. Some people keep a Christmas tree up year-round.
Do you have your tree up this year? Oh, no, not all year. You keep it up until... Okay, so let me ask you a simple question about you being offended. If you put up your... When do you think the best time to take down Christmas decorations from 2023?
To each its own. Nobody...
I asked you a simple question.
When did
you feel like it, and what was the earliest you took it down? Did you take it down before the end of the year or after the end of the year? Because some folks
After the end of the year.
Okay. Excuse me, I'm still speaking if you don't mind. Some people have this belief that you don't have stuff up from the year past. Some folks say, no, we got to have this down before January the 1st. There's some folks who have that belief. You don't bring in what was from the past into the new. They make it a point. I'm still trying to say something. You said it five times, Janet. Hold on.
Yeah,
That there's been times on January 1st, I remember the Christmas tree still being up, but by the second the Christmas tree was taken down. All right. But there are some people, like I said, that keep stuff up. They leave their outdoor lights out. I should say. They leave their outdoor lights up.
Can I say something else? Mm-hmm. But, Michael, sometimes, like,
you don't
have a lot of Christmas.
So you might as well.
I have a lot of Christmas decorations. Yeah, I have a lot of Christmas decorations. And so, therefore, if it takes me
3 or 4 days a week to put something up and get everything set up. It takes that much time to take the stuff down and pack it and put it away. So sometimes you don't just take it down right away because it takes so long. It takes me a day just to get the tree right without the decorations. So, yeah, I can see them taking forever putting it, taking it down because they paid. When you pay a designer to come put your lights up, you're not going to take those down right away. Depends on how much you pay
for
it.
Did you pay a designer? You paid for it? I didn't put anything up.
No, I told you, I didn't put anything up this year.
You're rushing, and I'm asking a question, okay? So you're saying that there's people who pay a designer. Yes, I know that they do that. All I'm saying is this. There are people, and I can see that where, you know, if it's something where you got hundreds of lights, yeah, I know it takes time. But then again, you have to look at where even some of the locations that I've seen here, yeah, it takes time. It depends on the time of when you started doing it. Let's say Christmas on the 25th, you might have started putting the stuff up the 1st of November, even the end of October, right after Halloween. Some people start putting up their Christmas stuff right after Halloween because all the Christmas stuff is in the stores during Halloween. So people do start early and then turn on the lights just before November because they want to bring it in because of Thanksgiving and this and the other. I get that. I understand it. And then I understand it does take time to take stuff down and pack and put it away. We're almost at the end of January. And in my opinion, okay, and like you said, to each his own. Okay, so I'm the each, and this is my own opinion, is that where it's the new year. It's not holiday season anymore. Why turn on the lights? I can see, okay, it's cold outside. I don't feel like dealing with this now. Cool. But why turn on the lights? Why run up your light bill? There's a house right down the road, and they still turn on their lights. I'm like, for what?
But they're paying the bill. You're not paying the bill, Michael. It'd be different if you were paying the bill.
I'm not saying it doesn't matter. Some people might have had a death in the family.
It could be a lot of reasons why people keep their lights on.
You are throwing out hypotheticals. You don't know that for a fact.
You don't know that for a fact either.
So if you had a death in the family, that's still okay. So if I had a death in the family, and I had my Christmas lights out, I might as well still turn on the Christmas lights, right?
Yeah, you know, just like I have a son whose birthday was January 19th. I have a son's birthday January 19th. My son died.
So
we think about him at this time of year.
So you're saying is that you don't know, Michael, they might have had a death in the family. So a death in the family.
Like me.
I'm saying, can you let me finish? Can you let me finish? I'm going to ask you again. Can you let me finish, Janet? I'm asking you to let me finish. So if that was the case, so you're saying there's a possibility that a person, the reason why their lights are still up, I'm not talking about the lights are still up. I'm talking about the lights turning on. You're saying due to that, it might have been a death in the family, and possibly they might have had to leave town, and their lights might be on timer, and that's why the lights are coming on. Is that what you're saying? That's the only reason why I could see that. Okay. Honestly, she don't want to answer my question. I don't get it. Okay. And she right to each his own, but I'm like, but why would you burn electricity? Here in Georgia, they already said that the light bill is going to go up. Your light bill will go up this year. All right. But I'm the same. That's just my opinion. Just like she has hers, I have mine. Okay? Simple as that. save yourself some money. Put off the doggone Christmas lights. Take them down when you want to. And stop spending that high electric bill. Okay. So, right now, we're going to go ahead and get ready to get on out of here. Again, make sure you tune in tomorrow night, same bat time, same bat channel, with the show called True Spoken. It's a good show, and I'm really happy to have this gentleman join the network. Again, 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time here on the TMGN. Let's see. I'm really disappointed that this team lost. I really am, you know. But, hey, it is what it is. I'm going to get ready to watch the next game. Got a few more minutes left, and we're going to get on out of here. So what I'm going to do is, well, I think Janet's mad at me now. To each his own. Okay. That's right. I'm going to go ahead and play another track, and we're going to get ready to go. We'll be back next Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern, okay, here on the TMGS. Okay, I'm trying to pull up a song, guys. So let's go with some more of Arrested Development. We'll be right back.
Hey, you guys, thank you for joining us again this Saturday. We'll see you next Saturday here on the TMGS, on the TMGN. Don't forget, tune in tomorrow night, same back time, same back channel for True Spoken with your host, Big Speak, better known as Darian Reynolds. Hey, see you next Saturday. God bless. Take care. Peace. We're out.